liberal democracies have a tendency to always look forward. And I'm really trying to take this opportunity to look back, you know, look at our past and look at the things that we inherit and try to think, okay, what are these continued legacies of basically anti-blackness?
Welkom bij een nieuwe reeks van Spring in het Diepe. In deze podcast neem ik, kunstjournalist Luc Hezen, je mee in wat er te beleven valt op het Spring Performing Arts Festival in Utrecht van 18 tot en met 27 mei 2023. In deze vierde en laatste aflevering van het seizoen praat ik met choreograaf en danser Ligia Lewis. Ze maakt vaak werk dat fysiek intens is, humor bevat en beweging combineert met abstracte onderwerpen zoals geschiedenis, de werking van het geheugen en het onbekende. Tijdens deze editie van Spring zijn twee performances van Ligia te zien. De eerste is A Plot, A Scandal, die is gecentreerd rondom het idee van een schandaal. Een schandaal veroorzaakt ophef en laat zien waar een maatschappij de grens trekt, maar ook waarover we diep van binnen fantaseren en ten koste van wie die fantasie gaat. En de tweede performance is Still Not Still, een voorstelling die via beweging vertelt over de zware geschiedenis van zwarte en niet-westerse mensen. Een verhaal dat verre van compleet of betrouwbaar is, omdat het voor een belangrijk deel is geschreven vanuit een eurocentrische blik. Ligia laat zien dat dit tot op de dag van vandaag effect heeft en maakt korte metten met onze veronderstellingen over vooruitgang of de illusie dat we inmiddels voorbij een maatschappelijk onderscheid zijn op grond van ras of klasse. Ligia, thank you for talking to me. You have two performances upcoming on Spring. First of all, A Plot, A Scandal. It is about the idea of a scandal, something immoral that should have been hidden but accidentally reveals someone's desires or fantasies. Why did you choose this theme?
I was interested in the possibility of thinking about like what society, normative conceptions of what social society is and are and what holds society together. And it's in the context of the Caribbean, specifically the Dominican Republic, where my family's from, there's just a long history of anti-blackness. And I recognize that that legacy has ghosted a number of stories of my ancestors. So I was interested in using this idea of scandal as a way to expose the kind of scandal of a kind of Eurocentric vision of the world that's kind of mapped everywhere. And in the context of the Caribbean, has made some stories hard to tell.
Do you have an example of one of those stories?
Of course. So I talk about my great-grandmother, for example, inside of A Plot, A Scandal, and about her practice of Dominican palo, which at a time in the Dominican Republic was considered, it wasn't per se like illegal, let's say, but it was kind of dangerous. There was a strong like anti-black government in place, and any sort of Africanist tradition was getting pushed aside as the government was kind of like looking to identify itself with Spain, its former colonizer. And this story might seem unique, but it's not in terms of the global kind of narrative around colonialism and its aftermath. Right. And so the things that kind of stay in the soil. And so I've spent more and more time in this region where my great grandmother and grandmother were both born. And I felt like it was important for me to approach these themes, particularly because I live in Europe and I've had the privilege of working and traveling with my ensemble work across Europe. But also I needed to point to some of Europe's kind of scandals, right? And that it's not something that's a distant past, that these things live on in all these different ways. Yeah, and there are multiple scandals inside of this piece. I mean, I talk about the history of the slave revolts and the different kinds of like minor revolutions that were happening across the Caribbean between 16th century and 19th century leading up to the Haitian Revolution. And if you look at the aftermath of the Haitian Revolution, the first kind of what's considered successful Black revolution, and you look at this region and what's left there, that's the scandal. You know, liberal democracies have a tendency to always look forward. And I'm really trying to take this opportunity to look back, you know, look at our past and look at the things that we inherit and try to think, okay, what are these continued legacies of basically anti-Blackness and why and how this kind of persists despite this kind of promise of something else.
There are several characters in your performance, John Locke being one of them, British philosopher from the 17th century, best known for his model of a free citizens who sign a social contract with the government, handing over yes. power in return for safety.
Yes.
Important for the foundation of Europe's liberal societies, but very
Absolutely.
Ironic that he was active in slave trading, did not think of black bodies as free people.
Absolutely.
Land from Native Americans, he did not consider lawful property. Why is he a character?
Well, when you look in the context of the Caribbean, especially now, at the way that land is distributed and who's made the most precarious, it's still the black and brown people. So the legacies, this kind of liberal notion of what it means to be a citizen is a Eurocentric concept. So this idea of property, I mean, I bring up Côte Noir as well, because Côte Noir kind of emerges in the 18th century France. It's how France deals with its property, its legislation that describes in detail how Europe gets to treat its property in Haiti. And I'm bringing that next to John Locke's notion of life, liberty, and property, which is to say that these are Eurocentric concepts that were made for Europe to enjoy their life and liberty. So these kind of universal concepts are mapped across the globe, and in practice, they become the very concepts that permit the subjugation of black and brown people. And we live by these codes. And it's a very unpopular sentiment to say this, I know, but it's no surprise that in 2023, black and brown people are getting pushed off the land in large parts of the Caribbean. Gentrification has spread across the globe. So it persists. So I'm trying to get at the root, at some of these concepts that were made universal that actually work against vulnerable subjects. And those are my ancestors. So of course, so I'm trying to, you know, the only way that I could plot my great-grandmother is to plot what Europe decided about this region, because that's very much played out in the present.
Right.
Obviously, these are tourist destinations, right, where people get to enjoy the spoils of, you know, what's left there, which is privatized beaches and resorts, still being served, of course, by the locals. So it's just like we normalize so much behavior. And this is in part because this very long legacy of, I mean, it's a long legacy of white supremacy, essentially. And it's a horrible thing to say, but at the same time, it's kind of very clearly laid out on the surface.
How do you attack such great themes and important matters by performing? Because these sound like things that you can talk about and you can write about, but how do you use the body language to express these themes?
Well, that's a really good question. It's I spend a lot of time in the studio just kind of dreaming, because my work, I am an artist, right? So I need to, as much as I'm interested in historical fact, that's not what I want the audience to be left with. So this translation just takes a lot of rigorous time being in the studio and translating it to these kinds of, what I like to think is like this physical narration or the possibility of storytelling. In this piece, I've tried to find a lot of humor. It's quite ridiculous. John Locke gets figured as this like ridiculous, bratty, like figure, like almost baby-like, just like the world is mine kind of thing. This like, you know, complete naivety. Because that's what it is when you come from the context where I'm from. It's not this like great doctrine to live by. You're like, actually, that wasn't really super well conceived, because, you know, look at extractivist economies and, you know, in late capitalism, it's just like not good for the earth. These were not in service to life on the planet, actually. Like, but they're things that we live by now. So I tried to be very playful in this. Like, you know, there are some things that we live by that are just no good. And like, it's really a lot of dreaming and playing in the studio as a way to try to reorient people's value system
You mentioned your use of humor in body language. Yeah. What other things will we see on stage?
What do you see on stage? I mean, in some ways, I would love to just leave that for the viewers to come see and witness, you know, because the danger of like reducing it to language, it's not a, like a very clear trend. It's not an essay. It's not a, it's not even a conventional story. It's me putting very difficult historical facts together in a kind of very imaginative way. And I hope better what people will see, maybe what people will feel is this. I'm hoping that people will feel the need to deal with history, the ghosts of history, for us to really confront them, not to try to push them aside, but instead see, okay, we have to work through this terror to find a way forward for all of us. It's the only way forward. And so that's what I'm hoping.
Your second performance, Still Not Still, also playing at Spring, comes from a similar background, the idea of the ghost of a past, as you just said. That's very interesting. Can you tell me the central idea of Still Not Still?
Absolutely. I mean, it has a lot to do with historical erasure. So this idea, this very condition of the normalization of erasing particularly Black figures from history and the danger of that, because that's in part the process of making the, you know, the world in Europe's image is taking away Europe's others' stories, right? So the starting point was reading about a 7th century Black Madonna that like emerges on the Sea of Italy. And she gets historicized not as ethnically like Black, but Black because the Stone Ages. Because the historians, medieval historians were like, oh, there's no way there could be a Black Madonna. I mean, you know what I mean? And once again, this idea that these European historians were obsessed with seeing the world as themselves. And indeed, she was a Black Madonna. There are Black Madonnas spread across Europe, actually. But the normalization of Christianity and whiteness, and that those two things had to be entangled, are in part what create this fantasy and what gets like literally mapped across the Caribbean once again, the justification being Christianity and God's will. So anyway, so this idea of erasure becomes just a more a psychic space that I occupy and try to think about, and what does this produce ultimately? And it creates this very absurdist piece that plays with the very complex nuances of what it means to be a human and to have all this power and to, you know, to abuse it. It's basically a long lament that's played out as a kind of absurdist play. And it's built as a kind of danse macabre, so a kind of dance of the dead. And within it, I try to also expose the very important point that we're not all touched by death very differently. And so the piece tries to break with a kind of universal myth of equality or something, that this idea, and instead kind of points more to some of the persistent problems of human relation, basically. Do you and feel it plays that, out in all these complicated ways.
Yeah. Do you feel that this is your duty, or is it your task as an artist to be dealing with this?
These themes? I don't, you know, I position myself as a Black femme, that, and I create work inside of a European context. And I think that all work is political. I mean, I do work my way through multiple forms of abstraction and different forms of expression. So I don't feel inhibited by these themes. I just feel like I'm just honestly portraying what it means to be me in the world. You know what I mean? And then I'm approaching this in the most honest way I can, while also simultaneously trying to be as playful and expressive as possible. But, you know, I think the romance of togetherness was something that needed a little bit more interrogating, something that happens often in a kind of dance field is the romance of collectivity. And so often I felt these things within a European context, they were being expressed through sameness. It was through, you know, people with similar subject positions. And I thought to myself, like, well, wait a minute. Are we not just entirely erasing history? Like, history was really brutal. And so is the present. That's the thing. It's like people are like horrified now. I'm like, well, like, you know, for at least Black and brown folks, it's 5 centuries of this, at least, you know, on this side of the globe. So it's not new, actually.
And it's still going on. And as you mentioned earlier, that there's a focus in Europe maybe on the future, or there is an assumption of equality so that we can look forward, maybe, so that we don't have to look at a shameful and painful past and do something about it.
Of course. And I think whenever you're thinking structurally, you have to sit with more difficult questions. And they're uncomfortable, like you said. And that's fine. I think we have to be okay with being uncomfortable and discomfort. That's very little that we have to suffer in consideration of what others had to suffer. So I'm really fine with sitting with these difficult questions to think, okay, what more is at stake? So just looking forward and this idea, oh, we'll just include everyone. If we start to include everyone, everyone will be happy. It's like, well, it probably demands more than that, right? And it's not to say that I have the answers per se, but I like to point to problems. I think it's super important as an artist to do that and to be as honest as possible with one's artistic practice and try to dig and poke holes in things that you see are not functioning as they purport to, I guess.
So what are the limits of your art? Do you also come into the domain of answers, of solutions, or is that
no,
beyond?
I don't think that's my responsibility. It's to create space for all of us to think together. Mm-hmm. Like, how do we move forward? What more is at stake?
And how is it for you personally to embody these topics? Because you make the choreography, you're a director, but you also dance yourself. How is it to use your own body to take on these difficult topics?
You know, I'm very, all of these themes are so close to me that it makes sense that I do inevitably just embody this. In a lot of ways, all of these works emerge out of me just listening to my own body and to the stories that are in my body, and then researching and recognizing, like, I'm comprised of much more than what dance school provided. You know, like, I am a product, we are all products of these long historical processes that aren't always made available to us, right? So yeah, I've just always been someone that stayed very curious. And so my studio practice has included like research alongside. So my movement practice and reading practice have happened simultaneously. And so for me, it just feels very close to me. So it's not challenging, I guess, in that way.
I'm very curious to see this all on stage. And thank you for pointing out that we're not even close to being done with the past. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Tot zover deze aflevering van Spring in het Diepe. Beluister ook vooral de andere afleveringen van dit seizoen. En bezoek springutrecht.nl voor meer informatie en tickets.